Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So we are sat in Gus G's tour van in Amsterdam outside the Paradiso venue. Tonight is show 8 of 12 with Steel Panther, Gus and myself holding it all together with some tunes in between. This has been the first time myself and Gus have got to spend some time together. And let's talk about this tour first of all. Let's go straight in on that. Yeah. I presume you guys have history, you and Steel Panther. I saw a video of you jamming out a tune with them on, I think, your Instagram. So where does that relationship begin with these guys?
Right. Well, it's kind of funny because Steel Panther opened some shows for Ozzy back in the day when I was in the band. So
right.
that goes like back into maybe, I don't know, 2010?
However, on their first album cycle.
Yeah. When I... That was their first album then? Maybe. It was, yeah. I never got to meet the guys then. I never got to see them or meet them. We always arrived at the venue late, and then by the time we were finished, everybody was gone. And anyways, so...
So you just presume they were probably the characters that you saw on stage to begin with, perhaps?
Yeah, just like everybody. They thought everybody thinks all kinds of things. But anyways, fast forward to 2013, and I am in LA recording my first solo record with Jay Rustin, who's also the producer of Steel Panther, amongst many other bands. And we're there, you know, just tracking drums. And he says, hey, why don't we go down to the House of Blues and check out, it was like Monday night or Tuesday or something. He said, hey, why don't we go down and check out Steel Panther? And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Their old residency night.
Right, yeah. So we go down there, and I'm hanging out there with Jay, and I'm actually getting kind of drunk.
As you do at those shows. I went to one in 2013 with my friend Jarrett from the band Bowling for Soup, and I'm sure every night was the same, but the night we were there, Matt Sorum was there, mm-hmm. Dave Navarro was there, Ricky Rackman was there. They said on stage that John Malkovich was somewhere in the room. I didn't doubt that either.
Yeah.
They used to be real star-studded events, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think during their residencies in on the Strip, when... whether it was Key Club or House of Blues, I think all the fucking celebrities of LA, of Hollywood, must have been at the shows.
Yep.
At some point in time. Anyways, so I'm there getting pretty drunk, and then all of a sudden I hear my name being called from stage. Where are you, dude? We hear you're here in the room. Come up now and fucking jam with us. I'm like, what? I didn't expect that.
I did not sign up for this, but I'm down.
Yeah, I just went on stage. I almost actually took the wrong exit going out, leaving the venue. I was like,
brilliant.
Yeah, I was
proper Spinal Tap.
Yeah, exactly.
Moment, yeah.
Like, no.
I had that last night in Oberhausen, and I locked myself out in the fire escape having a cigarette, and the door closed behind me. You had about 10 minutes left of your set. And I was like, fuck, man, if I don't get back in, they're going to go, DJ Matt's up next. And then there's just silence. I was like, oh, fuck. So I was like banging on the door, calling Joe.
We could have played a couple of songs. We could have filled in for you. Yeah,
if that happens any other point, then you know that I'm locked outside.
All right.
Keep jamming.
Yeah. Let me keep that fucker out there. I want to play two more songs.
So you got, what tune did you play?
Crazy Train.
Right on. So what have you made of their Crazy Train renditions? Was he always doing it as Aussie?
No, no, he wasn't doing that. No,
wasn't
no,
doing
not,
the full
not back
on Aussie
then.
Before.
No, no, it was just like they just did Satchel just gave straight. Me his guitar and they were like, okay, let's you're on, let's do it. I'm like, all right, and they were saying some jokes in between. I was too drunk to remember. It's all up on YouTube, anyways. It was fun, and then we hung out a little bit back backstage after the show and got to meet them. Really cool dudes, and. What happened next? After that, actually, after that, I kept in touch with Michael Starr for a yep. little bit. And
didn't he sing on one of your records?
Yeah, I asked him, said, dude, I'm making this record with Jay. I said, you want to sing on this track? And he was down for it. And
he's got such a great voice, hasn't he?
Fuck
I was
yeah.
saying to someone the other day, like, to go on these, not that this is like a really long tour, but every night to be hitting those notes that he is at. Absolute peak, like there's no drop in quality at
yeah,
all, is there?
Yeah, no, he's
and he's hitting
amazing.
Very different registers as well.
Yes, yes,
you know, he's impersonating Ozzy, David Lee Roth, Vince Neil, which isn't that hard. He's
yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah,
they certainly improved that song,
actually. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, no, I mean, they, I mean, he's got some serious pipes, that guy. He's
yeah,
one of the best fucking hard rock singers out there of our times, I think, you know?
Yeah, man,
so without a doubt. So
I
anyways,
think that's what I've come to really appreciate on this tour is the level of showmanship and musicianship.
Here's the thing. I realized that back then, at that night at the House of Blues when I saw them, I was like, that's when I really got it. I'm like, okay, now I see what this is. These guys are fucking not only amazing entertainers, but they can fucking play. This sounds like exactly like the album. These guys fucking rock.
Yep.
So I was totally blown away by their show, actually, and how well, also the whole joke thing, like they're really funny, and
together,
then
yeah.
and how they also improvise on those bits here and there, and I mean,
yeah, there's no script, is there? Because I've noticed that the way they lead into certain songs changes every single night,
yeah.
and you can tell because of the chemistry and the history and the rapport that they all have.
Right,
they're making it up on the spot, and there's very few moments where it doesn't flow and
right.
it doesn't work.
Right, right,
if any.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Couldn't agree more, sir.
And so from there, they're like, come out on tour, and you said, fuck yeah.
What happened after? Yeah, we did that. No, we did that, the song with Michael Starr.
What? Yep.
Sorry, where were we?
Just tracing the old history
yeah,
of
yeah,
Steel
Panther.
Yeah,
I'm like,
so
kind
you,
of like,
you do the record with Michael guest vocaling.
Yeah, he sang one song. I mean, the whole record had different guests on it, so we did a song called Redemption. Anyway, so what happened after that? I mean, we just... You know, we kept in touch like every now and then, just like dropping a text every now and then. Hey, how's it going, dude? And all that. And I also happen to know Joe Lester.
Yep.
Who's their TM / backline guy. And he's also an amazing photographer. In 2015, I worked with Joe on my second record. He took the promo photos.
Oh, wow.
For
okay.
For my second album. Anyway, so... you know, I knew the camp like one way or another, like a little bit, you know, from the outside and stuff. So I just texted Joe like a few months back. I said, hey, I see you got this tour happening. If you guys need any support acts, just, you know, give me a shout. It was just like that. Like, I'm not expecting anything back. And then all of a sudden, like a couple of weeks later, I hear back from Joe like, dude, the Panther guys really want you in this tour. I'm like, what?
Amazing.
So that's
I love it when I hear stories like that. It shows that sometimes I think when managers and agents and all that side of things get involved, it sort of almost blocks the friendships
yes,
to some extent.
Yes, I
when you
I
just
agree,
have
yeah.
a musician reach out to another musician and say, hey, dude, how about it?
Yeah.
And they're like, hell yeah. And it's yeah. just, it really is
and
that
usually
simple,
I'm,
isn't it?
And usually I'm very shy about that. I don't want to put anybody in a weird spot like that where they have to whatever, this or that. But I don't know, it just came out natural. And I didn't even ask any of the guys in the band. I asked Joe, I said, hi, are you? I asked him, hey, how you been, man? Long time. I said, are you TMing them now? He said, yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I said, I'm available in February if you guys need it. You're in Europe and UK, and I live in Greece. So, you know, if you don't want to bring a band out from America, I'll do these shows, you know. So, not really expecting anything. You know, I didn't really think he would even hit me back about that, but he did. Crazy.
And here we are.
Here we are, man.
In a bus having a chat in Amsterdam.
DJ Matt.
Beautiful day as well. Like
it is.
It's a big show, a huge tour for me to do. Usually I just do punk rock tours. So this is a kind of a new audience, a new style of performance. Not that it's, you know, drastically different.
Same
it's
here,
just
bro.
Pressing play on other people's music, but there's a different, obviously, approach to.
Do you tour a lot of clubs, club nights or around Europe, or this is your first European thing?
This is my first European run ever. Yeah, yeah. And I've got an after show in Paris, which I'm going to get you along to tomorrow
night. I'm coming
down
to that, man.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we're getting shit-faced. And I'm going to be the guy that's going to bug the DJ, but hey, play fucking, I don't know, whatever song comes up to mind at that moment.
You better. And yeah. Then in the introduction to this, when I put this out, I can let people know what your requests were, so they better be good.
Oh, okay. I'll have to think about it.
The jury is out. So let's talk about your upbringing. You were brought up in what area in Greece?
In a city called Thessaloniki. It's the second biggest city of the country. It's in the north part of the mainland. Yeah, born and raised there. I lived in all kinds of places. After I finished high school, I lived in the States for a while.
You went to Berklee Music School right?
Yeah, I went there.
Before we get there, What about your family life? Were your parents musical? Did you have any brothers and sisters that were into music? Where does the love for music come from?
It was through my father, because my father is, his main profession, he was a gym teacher in high school, but he used to sing at Greek weddings and during the weekends.
Like traditional Greek folk music.
Yeah. But my dad had, he didn't know much about rock and roll, but he had an open mind in music, you know, so he had a couple of rock vinyls at home, not much. But through him, I found out about the Beatles and Pink Floyd and the Eagles and stuff like that, and Queen, and he had like this vinyl of Peter Frampton Comes Alive.
That was the one, was it? That was the game changer.
That was the one, right?
Because of the guitar playing alone.
Yes, because of that track called Do You Feel Like We Do, and he was doing this talk box effect and making the guitar talk. So he was doing all this, I don't know, whatever. It's, when I was 8 or 9 years old, it all sounded like a fucking robot to me. It was like, whoa!
How's he doing that? What's going on?
Yeah, it was just one of those, like, what do you call it, like an epiphany moments or something?
Straight up. It was like a jolt of lightning.
Yeah, like, this is what I gotta do in my life. I need to learn how to do this.
How old are you at this point?
Nine.
Yeah. So is that your first guitar is 9 years old?
Yeah. I go up to my dad. I'm like, hey, can you buy me a guitar? I want to learn how to play that thing. He's like, yep. He was really happy about that.
And was it electric at first, or did you begin on the classical?
Unfortunately, it was a classical.
Classical.
Yeah, so I couldn't do any of the...
Is that because you had to prove your chops on that first?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I need to hear your son do all these arpeggios clean first, and then we can see about you getting an amp with distortion.
Do you think that learning that way, though, instilled in you a greater knowledge of the instrument and a broader skill set?
Me say this. I was not classically trained. I mean, I had a classical guitar, but, you know, I took lessons in a local music school, and there was my teacher there, bless her. She knew a little bit of piano, a little bit of guitar, a little bit of everything, you know, kind of like teaching the kids and stuff, a little bit of theory. And then it wasn't until later that I went to a conservatory and I switched to the electric. And then that happened when I was 14. That's when the whole, like, all the really hard years of practicing started.
Right.
Yeah.
And your first band is what age? And is that in Greece, or do you wait until you're over in the States to start putting some plays together? And
no, it was in Greece. It was during my high school years. I was in a cover band playing gigs.
What kind of covers?
All kinds of stuff, man. Deep Purple, ZZ Top, like all kinds of shit like
that. So is heavy metal big in Greece?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's big. I mean, lots of fans. I mean, back in the 90s, it wasn't that many shows that came through, you know, when there was like all these bands touring and stuff. Like a rock show was like the big event. It didn't matter who it was, you know.
Right.
But of course, as the years passed by, like, you know, we became more spoiled, like all the Europeans, you know. Like, so you get to see a lot of shows there all the time. There's a lot of competition in the live market nowadays. But back then, I remember, like, oh, fuck, I don't know, somebody, like, even like a power metal band, like Gamma Ray's coming to town. Like,
everybody
would, yeah. It was a little bit like that back then.
And then what takes you stateside? Is it the pursuit of a career in music?
Well, first of all, I had, I have some family there. My mother's brother, so my uncle, yeah, he lives in Florida, in Miami. So I used to visit him when I was young, summertime. I would spend some time there. I visited him 2 or 3 times. I remember when I was, first time I went there, I was 11, I think.
What was your first impressions of America as a young kid from Greece?
I loved it.
Yeah? I mean, what's not to like when you're that age, right?
Yeah, exactly. Everything was just like bigger and stuff. So yeah. I just, you know, it's mind-blowing seeing the skyscrapers. Like, you never had seen skyscrapers before, like when you're a kid, you know. And the big toy stores I liked.
Yeah, I remember toy stores, clothes stores, record
big,
shops.
Big like, breakfast fucking dishes, like yeah. everything. Oh, I
yeah,
can't.
Huge portions
yeah.
of food.
Yeah, I liked all that. I remember when I went back when I was 14, I was really into Beavis and Butthead, and I found these fucking full-on head masks of Beavis and Butthead.
Amazing.
You could not find that shit back in Greece. I was a cool kid that would come back with all the cool stuff from America.
And the cool records, the new CDs, yeah.
Yep, CDs, all kinds of shit, like t-shirts that we didn't have back there.
How amazing were Beavis and Butthead back in the day? Like, they were the almost the tastemakers, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
they could make or break a band. Really?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they had that kind of clout.
For a while there, yeah, they yeah. did, yeah, yeah. yeah, a lot of bands got, like, they were hoping to be fucking there for 2 seconds and then hoping that Butthead would say something like, this sucks, and then that they would probably go on to sell a million records yeah. or something. crazy, yeah. I remember I used to fucking sit, it was like up on Headbangers Ball, like around, after midnight, I think, right? And I used to fucking sit up there and watch that, you know, stay up all night, and it was cool.
And get your doses of new bands, right? That was also the means of discovery, wasn't it? Pre-internet, it was MTV.
Yes, you're right.
That was it.
That was it, man.
So you get over to the States and you move to LA. Is that where you first end up?
No, actually, I didn't go to LA until later. In the beginning, it was Berklee College of Music in Boston. I had a scholarship for that. It only lasted 2 weeks with me. I was like,
why is that?
I don't know. I was just like, fuck that. Nothing against the school, you know, but I was just like, hey, by that time I was already in a conservatory for 4 years. I knew like theory, harmony. I've done a lot of basic stuff. I just really couldn't.
You felt like you knew all there was to know to a point.
No, not really. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I just felt like I needed the real experience rather than just the academic experience. I just
you
didn't
need to get out there and play shows.
I needed to play. Yeah, I needed to find a couple of other dudes, form a band, and then see how that's like to go out there and try to make our own music and stuff. And maybe in hindsight, looking back now, maybe that was like my excuse to go out there in America, and like the Berklee College scholarship was like
the means to the end.
Yeah, maybe it was. I don't know. I was hoping I was gonna like it a lot because I had already attended the year before. I had attended this 5-week summer camp program they had, and I had a lot of fun there. I met a lot of cool kids, good players. We made some demos. So I was looking forward to going back to study full time, but then it wasn't really the same the next time I went there. So I decided to drop out, moved down to Florida with my uncle, started working at his diner, and try to find a local band to play. And at that time, by that time it was 1999, and it was not really a healthy period for classic heavy metal in the States. It was a lot of the new metal stuff.
Yep.
And I was
so really, that wasn't really your cup of tea, was it?
No, not at that time. Anyway, so and I really didn't know what to do. I was, and nobody around that area was playing the stuff. It was either like death metal, Florida death metal, or stuff like, I don't know, like new sounds. I remember like everybody was talking about Meshuggah. That was like the new sound then. And I was like, I don't know, man. I like the Michael Schenker group and
yep.
Yngwie Malmsteen's Rising Four. So I guess I'm outdated here a little bit. So
you felt like you missed the boat.
Yeah. And I just went back to Europe. I went back to Greece for a while. And then some friends of mine were recording in Sweden, and I was like, that's where I gotta go. I gotta check it out in Sweden, because that's where a lot of the metal bands were coming up at the time, like the Gothenburg sound, you know, bands like In Flames and who else, like Dark Tranquillity, At the Gates, like bands like that that were, you know, still like death metal, but they had like cool guitar riffs on there, you know. It was yeah. like melodic stuff, and there was a certain level of musicianship which I dug. And yeah, I ended up hanging out with at Fredmon Studios with my buddies from Greece. It was a band called Exhumation, a local band that made a couple of records there. They took me with them, and I ended up hanging out with Frederick Nordstrom, the owner and producer of Studio Fredmon, and producer of all those bands, you know, Hammerfall, At the Gates, you name it, all those bands. And me and him started a band. That band was Dream Evil. That was kind of like my introduction to the music industry.
And at this point in time, how old are you?
19, 20.
So you've obviously had your upbringing in Greece, period in America, over in Sweden. That's a lot of traveling for someone of that age. Were you getting exposed to, obviously, not just different kinds of music, but different kinds of people and the scope of life, as it were? Did you feel like you were evolving and growing as a young man as well?
Yeah, I felt like I was learning a lot really fast, you know, just like absorbing and, you know, like just being around different cultures. And, you know, like Sweden was a totally new thing to me, like Scandinavia. I'm like, by that time I had experienced America and the American culture, but I knew nothing about the Scandinavian culture. So that was really cool as well at the time. Yeah, it definitely helped shape my character. You know, at that time when you're like 19, your brain's still like absorbing a lot of stuff like sponge, and you're like, it still builds your character and your personality. And I took the stuff that I thought suited me, you know, from America or from Scandinavian culture, and of course, you know, my upbringing in Greece, and we have strong family values anyways where I come from and stuff. I'm not really religious, or my family isn't really religious, but, you know, still, like, you know, the family thing and doing the right thing and all those good morals and yeah, just trying to see what the fuck is gonna happen with my life, you know. It was exciting times, man. It was exciting times. I loved every second of it. Everything was really new. I had a great time there in Sweden. Stayed there for 3 years on and off, try to get the band happening, making demos. I remember it was really hard to get a job because I didn't speak Swedish. Everybody speaks English there, but when I went in there to you know, ask for a job, they wouldn't hire me. So I ended up working
on that basis.
And I ended up like doing dishwasher jobs like in Greek restaurants and stuff.
So you were really slumming it and living hand to mouth.
Oh yeah, man. I remember like I was living on fucking canned food for a few months. It was, but it didn't matter. That's the thing, you know. People are like, oh my god, how did you do it? I'm like, I didn't give a fuck. It was fun.
Do you think that still exists in today's world, that absolute hunger and passion and desire to make music, that people are willing to, say, live in an apartment or a flat with no central heating and just be freezing cold, and, as you say, to live on a diet of tinned,
you know,
shit food? Like, do you think that's still in effect?
I would hope so. I really hope so. It is, because that really is like...
Because every band did it, didn't they? Whether they were Black Sabbath, Metallica, like every world-conquering huge band started out
so
like that.
Different. Now it is so different. Like kids with, you know, like with social media, it's like a different world. Like now you don't have to fucking go knock on somebody's door, like fucking travel somewhere else and, like you say, eat dirt for like 5 years in a basement. Like you make your record in your bedroom and then you put it up there, and then if it, you know, it has some catches some traction online. I don't know. It's a different times, man. I'm not saying
it is, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not saying that there isn't, you know, people aren't struggling, like young artists aren't struggling today. It's probably tougher for them nowadays because it's
to break, certainly.
It's just a plethora of,
if you look at certain bands as well, like they wouldn't maybe hit until their third, sometimes even fourth album. A band like Queen, for instance.
Yeah.
At least second or third. And nowadays, if you don't hit on the first, it's like you're dropped, aren't you? Yeah. The record labels need that instant return.
Yeah, correct.
So you don't get that same incubation period where they're nurturing and developing the talent and bands are finding their voice and their identity.
I don't think labels even do that anymore. They're just they're just looking to sign somebody that already has the clicks, the views, the streams, and then they're going to be interested to talk to them. I haven't seen anybody like that. It was just picked from a label or a management and be like, okay, yeah, we're going to invest like, I don't know, 200 grand on you. And then we're going to see what happens by the third single or something.
Yeah. In a period of a few years.
Yeah. No, that doesn't exist.
No.
I haven't seen that, at least. Maybe it is, but I don't know. It's different times. But that's okay. I caught the tail end of the old business model and I'm happy I did that. You know, it taught me a lot of things. Yeah, it made me a lot more, it kept me grounded, I would say. Like, because a lot of people always come up to me and say, dude, you're such a simple guy. Like, you're just, you know, how come you don't have this, you know, this rock star attitude or this or that? You could have been a diva. I'm like, you know, when you've carried your own fucking shit in the rain, fucking loading up the van like countless times after you've played for like a couple of thousand people or something, you know, then you know you're like, their whole fucking rock star attitude goes away quickly. So if you're like
If you want to last.
If you're realistic, yeah, if you're realistic about where you are and who you are and what exactly is happening around you, then there's no room for bullshit like that. That's what I always tell them, but I don't know. Everybody's different.
I think everybody also has a certain perception. Are you good on time?
I'm good. I'm just...
Yeah, yeah. You're getting a call.
Yeah, I am, but...
What's up, baby girl?
Hey. No, it's Jimmy. I don't know what
FaceTime Jimmy... FaceTiming live in the van.
Exactly. No.
So what...
It is Valentine's Day today, though.
It is... We didn't even mention that, actually. Yeah, it is Valentine's Day in Amsterdam at a Steel Panther show. That has all the ingredients for a great night, doesn't it?
Yep.
You can't help but feel not, you know, annoyed or sad about being single on a day like this. Are you a married man?
I'm a married man. Happily married.
How long have you been married?
8 years now.
Dad? You got kids?
No, not yet. Not yet. Hopefully soon. Let's
on
see.
The cards, though.
Yeah. I mean, I need to be more home and practice, you know? I haven't been home much. I've been touring, so yeah. So I plan to practice some more.
Practice baby making.
Yeah, I'm going to practice on
that
one.
It's the best part, right?
Exactly. It's gotta be. Yeah, when this tour finishes, I'm going to go home and practice. You know, I'm already getting horny with the Steel Panther shows.
Well, easy now, Gus. Easy now.
Hey,
not
hey.
In the van.
Yeah, yeah.
So what took you back to Greece? Just because it's home? Had you felt like you'd done your time in Los Angeles or the States or wherever
Look,
you were
Look, man, it's like the way...
The pull of home brought you back.
I liked living in Greece. I mean, it's pretty quiet where I live. If I know the pros and cons, you know, of course, because it's a discussion that comes up quite often. Like, there's a lot more opportunity in the States and all that, a lot more money to be made. I'm like, yes, but money isn't everything. And I've had a lot of opportunities. I'm not complaining. I've done everything that I ever wanted to do in my career and a lot more. I mean, I would never thought that I would be playing with somebody like Ozzy Osbourne. So I've done everything I wanted. So I'm like, I was thinking to myself when I asked myself that question, where do you want to be when you're not on tour? Like, where's
yeah.
So I feel like living back home in Greece, it's gives me and my family a better quality of life, and I like it there. And sure, yeah, maybe I might be a little bit away from you know,
the industry
and stuff. Yeah, but then again, I play like what 100 shows a year, and I see a lot of people all the time. And
you see them at the shows.
I see them at the shows, and yeah,
festivals, and
I still do business trips and all that stuff the whole time. So
and you're self-managed.
I am right now. Yeah, for the last few years, I have been. So
a lot of work, but more freedom. Is it?
Absolutely.
Is it nice being in control of your own shit?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is. I love it. I was always interested in the industry part, the business part of it. Like, I want, like, even when I was a kid, I wanted to know, what is a publishing deal? Why do we get this and why do they get that and what does that mean? And
because so many musicians over the years have been ripped off, haven't they?
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
I guess that as well doesn't really happen anymore, but there used to be decades of just bands getting absolutely rinsed and taken complete advantage of.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even if you sign like a new deal, even nowadays, it'll still will not be in your favor, which I totally get. You know, if somebody's going to invest in you, in your music and in your career, I mean, they will have to be getting the lion's share. I get that. I understand that. And we did that, you know, with Firewind in the early years and stuff. And then when we were in a better spot and we had sold some records and then we could go in, you have more leverage, you can go in and negotiate a different type of deal and stuff. So but you have to be interested into that, and you have to be aware of that. If you don't have somebody to show you that way that you really trust, you really got to be aware of it yourself and do your own digging and searching.
Did you have somebody who was advising and, you know, sort of showing you that path, or were you just reading up about it yourself and
I did have a management, actually, from the UK for about 10 years. And they were also my, they were booking shows. They started like that, and then they started helping me out with contracts and stuff. Sharon Richardson, she helped me out a lot with that. But I also was, I knew a lot of managers of different bands as well, just being around and touring with different bands. And I would always, one thing I was not shy of was going up and asking for advice and asking people's opinions. Like, I would go, you know, I don't know, if I thought I had something to, I wanted to ask Arch Enemy's manager, for example, I would go up and ask him, like, hey, what do you think about this or that? And then I would just sit there and listen to what they have to say. And then and then kind of like put the pieces together and trying to figure things out. That's how I learned, basically, just by doing bit by bit and going on to the next tour and to the next album.
that's all it really is, isn't it? It's kind of a game of like haphazard, just you do it and you learn on the job.
Yeah.
And as events unfold and you gain experience, you then apply the lessons that you've learned to the next step.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's born a professional, man. You know,
no.
You have to kind of like, you become professional, hopefully, along the way. I mean, to me, it's still like I'm making a living for my hobby. You know, that's how I look at it. It's not like in a lot of ways it is a day job, but in a lot of ways it's not. I mean, I'm thinking about it. It's still like I have been here for almost 20 years playing my fucking stupid riffs and like widdly guitar licks, and I can pay the rent with that, and some people like it. Awesome.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Who are the guitarists that you most admire around now still?
It hasn't changed much, the list. You know, it's guys like Gary Moore, Tony Iommi, Yngwie Malmsteen, Paul Gilbert, Shanker, Uli John Roth. Yeah, those dudes.
And, okay, let's talk about the call from the 00.
Yeah.
Does it come from a telephone call? Is it a meeting?
From a big red phone.
Is it an email? How do you get the invitation? How does the word reach you that Ozzy wants you to play guitar in his band?
It was an email through somebody from the management. And they just,
What was the email header? Do you remember?
I don't remember, actually. Good question. I don't remember.
You must still have the email somewhere, no?
It must be
It's got to be in there.
I should have saved it. It must be in my send folder or whatever.
You have to trawl through fucking 15 years or however long ago.
Exactly,
when was it? 2000 and what?
2009.
2009.
Probably not there anymore.
Damn it. So you get an email from the management company basically just laying it out in no uncertain terms. You want to come and audition. How's it being presented?
It was just like, hey, we were thinking of you for the, you know, keep this internal. We're thinking of you for the position of the guitar player in Ozzy's band. Would you be interested in something like that?
Is that a total shock to you? Does it come completely out of the blue, or was there an inkling perhaps on your part?
I totally expected it. I'm like,
you did.
Of course. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be, I knew I was going to be the next Aussie guitarist. Yeah. So, I was like, yep, all right.
You were basically just waiting, like, I mean, it's a later than I thought it was going to be honest. What have you been doing all this time?
Exactly, yeah. What's the matter with you guys? But yeah, I'll do it, whatever. No.
Fine.
Yeah.
I've got nothing better going on. Yeah.
No, it was... It was that email. I was, I don't know, 2 a.m. back home in Greece. I was just sitting, just watching the good old telly with the missus. And
classic.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good night in.
Yeah, exactly. And no, the email comes in and I'm like, whoa, what the fuck just happened? Just like pause everything for a second. And I'm like, I don't drink, man. Look, I don't drink. I don't really drink. I get drunk maybe once a year or something, you know.
Tomorrow night.
That's my drunk night for 2019. And and then I sit down there and I pour a fucking whiskey shot, like three shots of whiskey. Like bang, bang, bang. just to fucking calm down, because my heart was like, my heart rate was going like, I'm like, I'm gonna fucking have a heart attack. I gotta fucking calm down. Is this real? What is this? I knew that, I knew who that guy is. I'm not gonna say any names now, but I knew who the guy that worked for Sharon was, because he was working at Ozzfest, and I had been at Ozzfest prior to that as a touring guitarist for Arch Enemy back in 2005. So this was like, fast forward to 2009. I get this email. I'm like, oh my God, I know who this guy is. They're fucking serious. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. I'll, you know, let me know when you guys want me to be there. I'll fly out there. So I learned a bunch of songs, and then they flew me out there.
How long a gap is there between getting the email and then getting on that plane?
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
I actually had a, they were like, yeah, it's no rush. I said, I said, when you want me to be there? Because I had a tour coming up, a UK tour actually, was Firewind and Stratovarius.
And you're like, I need to get that done before I head out on tour, because otherwise I might miss my shot.
What?
Do you think you would have missed the shot if you would have gone out on tour and that was when you were
being called to audition? I asked them actually, I said, when do you want? And they were like, no rush. And they were like, you can be here next month or something. Like, take your time, learn the songs well. And so I went out there, I did the tour. The UK run was like 5 or 6 shows. I came back home, started practicing like a fucking madman, and then went out there. When was that? Like May or June, something like that. I think in June 2009.
And what's the audition? Is it you and the full band? Is Ozzy there?
It's me, Blasco on bass, and at the time his drummer was Mike Borden, but he was out with Faith No More, so they got Tommy Clefairos in, who was Blasco's buddy from Rob Zombie's band. And we go in there. I thought it was going to be like a line of guitar players. You know, you hear all those horror stories. Yep. Like, it was like fucking 150 guitar players, and I got the call. It was like, no, it was just, they had just had blocked that day for me, maybe because I was coming all the way out of, you know, from Greece. So we went down there, and they were like, yeah, you can go in with a band and jam for a couple of hours. And I was like, oh. Then, because I was stressing about that, I'm like, can I have some time to do my warm up? And they were like, yeah, just do fucking, we ran through the songs a couple of times. And then by that time, I was pretty confident. I'm like, okay, I know I can do this now. So
you are quietly confident. You believe in your ability. You know the songs. Nerves don't get the better of you.
Yeah. No, that's me. Shit.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
I am confident about my playing, and you know, I know if I know like a piece of music, I know I can deliver. I can execute, absolutely. I didn't know how it was going. The only thing that was nervous for me was making me nervous was I didn't know how the audition was gonna go, or how it was gonna roll. But once they told me that you have a couple of hours to, you know, dial in your tone and like warm up and stuff, then by that time when I heard that, I'm like, okay, I got this. I think I can do this now. So, and then Ozzy came down with Sharon and their assistants and briefly met. And they were really cool. I was a little bit, you know, I was starstruck, of course. And then, you know, he was really cool. He said, hey, man, don't relax. Don't worry, man. If you fuck up, it doesn't matter. It's rock and roll. Just play your heart out, you know. And that really broke the ice, you know. So then we started playing. We played 6 songs back to back. And then I remember he turned around to me and said, you're fucking great. I'm like, oh, wow, thank you. And then he went off to another room next door with Sharon, and everybody was talking. I was just left there, just me and Tommy, looking at each other. I'm like, okay, so now what? And he goes, you got the gig, man. I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? Why you think they're in there chatting right now? I'm like, oh, shit. Maybe you're right. Because if they didn't like it, they would have said, okay, thank you, bye-bye, whatever. And then, indeed, like 2 minutes later, everybody comes out, and, you know, they're just... They were like, hey, how would you like to come back and do a gig with us? And that was the best day of my life. It was fucking cool.
I'll bet, man. I can't even begin to imagine the sense of pride and accomplishment and humility and excitement.
Yeah.
What a trip. Who's the first person you tell? Are you with your wife at this point?
I was with my wife. Yeah, she flew out with me. She was my girlfriend back then. So she was at the hotel waiting anxiously. Yeah. And, you know, we actually flew into LA for 24 hours just for this and then back home. And of course, we couldn't tell anybody when we went back.
That's it. Yeah.
Until it's like official and you're doing it, you know? And that was like 3 months of waiting.
3 months. Fucking hell. Yeah. Chomping at the bit to tell everyone.
Yeah. And
how many people do you think over the years have blown their opportunity because of their inability to keep quiet? There must have been plenty over the years
in various
capacities, right? That are just like, fuck yeah! And they're like, you weren't meant to say that, so see you later. You've blown it.
I got the gig.
Imagine how fucking pissed at yourself you'd be if you'd blown it like that. Like, I had it, and now it's gone.
Yeah. No, I did. I was like...
I guess with a camp like that, you have to learn to, you know, toe party line, as it were, right?
And that was also like a learning experience. Like, really, like, this is your place. You don't talk. You show up. You play. Like, it taught me a lot. It was a certain discipline, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost
like a factory job. Like, you're checking in and out, right? Obviously, it's extremely creative and fulfilling, but...
Yeah, and you know, I was not used to being a hired gun. This was like my first gig. My second gig. Well, the first one was with Arch Enemy, 2005. That was for a brief time, like a couple of months, just for the Ozfest tour. But like, this was like a serious like hired gun gig. At that time, all I knew was just being the boss in my own band.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I think, honestly, I think I'll go back into that family upbringing in Greece, you know, the family value thing. I think just having those manners and knowing your place and knowing when to speak and not to, that helped me a lot to go through the motions really quick and figure out what's what and what I should do and what I should not do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't know, I could have been some arrogant kid that was like, hey, when are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. It seems like it's a very family-run business as well. Obviously, you know, Sharon's his wife and his manager, but it does seem to have that bubble around it, right? And if you're in the bubble, then you're in it.
Yeah.
But if you ain't in the bubble, you're probably not getting in.
I think it's like that with all those that level artists, superstars. You know, they have their, you know, in their camps and how they're
in
they
a
are.
Circle. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's how it is with everybody. I would assume that, you know. Everybody's running their own business. It's all, you know, like I say, you have, if you're in the circle, I mean, even for us, then when we were in, we didn't get a lot of info. Like, that was one of the things that I was always kind of like, why don't we know what's happening this time next year? We only know this next tour and then we don't know anything. I would find out about a lot of gigs through the internet.
So, really?
Yeah, it was a little bit, in the beginning, it was a little bit disheartening. I was like, oh, come on, I really need to know. But then again, I can be like,
Patient?
No, impatient like
impatient.
That. I was impatient like that. Yeah. Yeah, I really need to know.
Yeah.
I need to.
Well, because you want to know what's going on with your life. You know, you want to know that there's
a certain element of certainty there.
And
yeah, and I'm a control freak too in my own band. So I needed to know like the schedule. And when I was not getting it, I was like, what the fuck? So, but I learned how to adapt. Like I said, it was interesting to be a hired gun at that level, you know, for such an artist.
What about that Scream record? That was 2010, 2011 that came out, was it?
10.
I remember I was on Kerrang Radio and I remember playing the single Let Me Hear You Scream a lot. Like,
what did you think of that, like, new Aussie sound at that time?
I loved that particular single. Mm. I couldn't remember any of the other songs off the top of my head off that album now, but I thought Let Me Hear You Scream was as big and, you know, a statement as any that had come in the last 20 years from him.
Yeah.
What was your did you get involved hands on with the writing of that record? What was your role?
No, not really. I mean, when I went there, it all happened so fast. I was there doing the gig with him. Then 2 weeks later, I came back, did another festival. And then they're like, stay here for another week and come around the house tomorrow. So I went down to Ozzy's house. He had a nice, fucking amazing studio in his house. So he started playing me all these songs he was working on that had no guitar. It was a producer, Kevin Churko, kind of like putting like all the guitar parts, like editing the fuck out of it. And he was like the main writer, him and Ozzy. And they're like, well, can you play some solos over this? So I sat there for a week and did solos. And then I went home and heard nothing for a month. And then I got an email from Sharon and she said, hey, look, we shouldn't have done this. Like, we really like what you did. Like, you had no info and still you nailed it. Like, we would like you to come back and properly work on this record. Like, work on all the guitars from scratch. Take as long as you need. And it was really cool, man. So I went back there And I started re-recording all the riffs, all the acoustic parts. We made solo parts. The songs didn't have any solo parts. But the compositions were there already, you know. So that was also a hard task for me because I'm only used to making records that I write the songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So somehow I had to leave my mark on there as a new Aussie guitar player or as Gus or whatever it is on a record that is not mine.
It's an Ozzy Osbourne record.
And it's an Ozzy, yeah. So it was like fucking, it was a heavy...
You know, you're walking into the shoes of Randy Rhoads and people like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was,
But you enjoyed the task and you feel proud of the end results.
I was up for the challenge. You know, at the time I was scared shitless. But, you know, it could be haunting, the ghost of the guitar player's past, you know.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
But I was up for the challenge. I'm just not a quitter in life. And I'm like, you know what? I remember Kevin Churko telling me, I said to him one day during the recordings, I said, you know what? I'll probably go down in history as the fucking worst guitar player he ever had. And he goes, yeah, but you know what? You will be one of them, though. And that's not bad. That's better than most fucking dudes out there. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. I never thought about it that way.
Perspective is everything, right?
Yeah. So I was up for it, man. I did the best I could, you know, given the time frame, the way things were. I love the record. I didn't write a fucking note on those songs, but I played all the guitars, and I think they were really good compositions. Kevin Churko is a great writer. Ozzy makes amazing vocal lines, always. Anything that guy sings is just amazing. And I'm proud of that record to this day. You know, it's great.
Is there anything you change about your experience within the group? Would you change anything from your own personal point of view that was within your control that you could have done differently? Or are you...
Not really. I mean, my job there was only to show up on time and play guitar. It's
right.
Not really.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
I really...
There was no room for...
There was no... Yeah, and I didn't really... I was not really that pushy kind of guy either. I don't know if I should have been, but I didn't feel like I should be. It was... Things were taken care of, mostly. Now, I don't know. Like, I've often wondered, like, should I have done more of like my versions of the songs live? Because my philosophy at the time was just stick to the originals, just play them as they were. I think he's going to like that, and I think he did like that. But should I do Gus all over the thing and like start changing up solos and things here and there? Would that have given me a bigger stamp into his legacy? I don't know. That's the only question that has remained in my head. But you know what? What's done, it's done. And I think what I did back then was the right thing. So that must have been the right thing.
And in terms of touring with Ozzy and traveling the world with a man of that, just a larger than life character, have you got any favorite memories that stand out?
Oh,
I mean, there must be 10 books from everybody that spent that amount of time with him, but
yeah, I honestly,
particularly standout moments that make you smile when you think back?
There have been some funny moments for sure, because I mean, just being in the room with a guy, it's guaranteed like after 2 minutes you're gonna fucking be on the rolling on the floor laughing, you know. Like,
everybody says that about him. Everybody that spent time with him
just
says
a natural,
he's,
you know,
he's fucking hilarious on and off the stage.
Yeah, yeah, correct. And I mean, the Aussie that I met was not the madman, like the crazy dude that snorts ants and cocaine and stuff. He just drank tea and sat there and said, you know, told stories, and it was really funny. Sometimes he would forget and he would tell this same story over and over again, and that was always, every time, even whenever he did that, it was always as funny. Even the second third time, everybody would still laugh the same. I don't know why. And yeah, I mean, you know how he is. You know, if you've seen any of the Osbournes or if you know anything about him, you know, people that have followed him, he's, yeah, the guy that you see. Is he can be goofy, he can be, he's just himself, you know. And he's a really funny guy. And of course there's this amazing aura around him, you know, like, you know, when he's present in the room, you know. Absolutely. Did I tell you about the time I took a sleeping pill from him?
No.
Man, I should have never done that.
Enough to knock out an elephant.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I was having insomnia after the show, and he's like, yeah, come around my room, I'll give you one of my... this is the light one that I take. I take two, he said, but, you know, I'm an old man. You take this one, yeah, you'll be fine. And I kid you not, man, I almost didn't wake up the next day. like the lobby call was like 5:30 p.m.
PM. Brilliant.
And I woke up at 5:20, like totally lost in oblivion, like in another fucking world. I thought I fucking died and came back from the dead. And I, the minute he saw me, he was like, hey, you're fucking stoned, man. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe, man. And the tour manager pulls me to the side. He's like, you fucking idiot. Why would you ever take drugs from this guy? and that's when it occurred to me. I'm like, oh, you're right. I should have never done. Oh, yeah.
He's a fucking hero, isn't he?
Yeah, man.
He is a fucking hero.
You live and you learn.
You were telling me on the plane the other day, myself and Gus and his band shared a flight over from Manchester to Dusseldorf. Yeah. And I was joking that your singer Dennis was not in the queue with you guys. I was like, oh, be sure you don't leave your singer behind. And you were like, oh, no, that's happened before. Tell me about that. This was recently, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean...
Or did you even say there's been a couple of occasions?
There's been a couple. It's happened to me a couple of times because, yeah, like our old singer quit a couple of times during the tours. I remember we were in France on stage and then finished the song, finished our gig, and then he's like, all right, guys, I'm going to the airport in the morning. We're like, what?
You're like, what? We don't have a flight?
Yeah, exactly.
Tour's going on.
Like, no, I'm going back. I got to go back and that's it. I'm done. Like,
did he give you any reason or was he just let him out?
He had to. He didn't want to quit his day job and he went back. And I don't know what happened. I can't remember exactly what happened. He just left us in the middle of, like, we were on tour. Actually, we were on tour with the band Angra. It's Kiko's, the guy who plays in Megadeth now, guitarist. That's his band, Brazilian band, power metal band. Was Angra and Firewind. That was a tour. And we're playing somewhere in France and he just left. And we're like, okay, so now what?
What do you do in that situation?
And we called up.
Make some frantic phone calls.
We called up another guy called Henning Basse, who ended up being our new singer now. And we're like, we have a travel day tomorrow and then we're going to Spain. Can you learn 8 songs and come out and do this? Like, yep. So we got him on a flight and we did it. We forged on.
That's what you got to do, isn't it? Yeah. You got to keep the wheels rolling.
Show must go on.
Do you ever struggle with the idea? I mean, would you ever want to be a singer? Would you ever want to be the front man as well? Have you ever tried it? Is it ever something that you...
When I was younger, I did not
you
want
would have
that role.
More of?
When I was younger, I didn't want that role. I always wanted to be the guitar player. After my experience in my career with singers, leaving like that, and like, yeah, I mean, Firewind has had 4 or 5 singers by now.
It's usually drummers, isn't it? You've got the market on singers.
Drummers too. Singers and
drummers.
Drummers.
And
yeah,
drummers.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
So it's basically just you and then
just me,
the other
bass
two
player
are just
and
constantly
the keyboard
changing.
Yeah. Yeah. The core of the band is me, the bass player and the keyboard player, and then singers and drummers just come and go. Actually, we've had the same drummer for like 8 years now, so we're good. With Johan, who's yeah. also drumming for my solo band. But after all these experiences, I wish I had a fucking godlike voice and I could have been the singer as well.
So you just don't feel confident in your ability as a singer? Is that what it is?
I don't think I have good enough, like my voice, I can do backing vocals. I'm good with that. I can.
You can hold a note.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I don't think the sound of my voice is as good as the singers that I work with. So I'd rather work with some of the best instead of me singing, you know, half-assed. So.
Does Tremonti sing on his project?
Yes, he does. And he has a really good voice, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does, because he's obviously, you know, in the band with Miles, who's one of, well, ironically, one of the great guitar players as well that a lot
he
of
is,
people
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah.
He's an amazing guitarist as well, isn't he?
They're both great guitar players and good singers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great singers, both of them. I mean, Miles is like, fuck.
Next level, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Mark, I mean, when I heard him on his solo record, I'm like, whoa, the guy's got a voice like that? I'm jealous.
Yeah, right. And I guess you don't have to rely on that other element and
yeah.
as a control freak yeah. have you just accepted that that's your fate
yeah
and
exactly
you can
I mean that's why when
to the gods
to be honest with you the one of the reasons why this my new solo band is a trio is because of that reason I didn't want to have to rely
cut
on
cut back on the variables
yeah and a lot of
the
great
risk
and the good singers are always taken they have other gigs to do so you know when you're doing tours like that where you cannot pay somebody like I don't know however much they require or whatever or just to put them on a payroll like that you know only the really big bands can do that these days
yeah
then you're gonna have to settle finding different guys and since this is a solo project I mean Dennis sings amazing and he's a bass player, but his hidden talent is also his voice.
And what's those mics that he uses? I love those old Elvis style ones.
The Elvis mics, I call them. I don't know what they are. I just call them the Elvis mics.
Dez from Devil Driver uses them as well, yeah. Doesn't he? I think they look amazing. Yeah. But someone the other night was like, nah, you don't want to be using them. I was like, why would you not want to use that mic? Yeah. I want to get mics like that for the podcast.
You should.
You reckon I should? Yeah, How much are they? How much reckon they go for?
I don't know. You should ask Dennis.
Yeah. Is it his mic?
That's his, yeah.
All right, then I'll do that.
Because he's a studio producer as well.
Right.
So he knows all about that shit. You should ask him.
Are you interested in that side at all? Are you interested in mixing, producing?
No,
that's not your bag.
That I don't have. I'm not much with that kind of technology and the sonic side of it. I mean, I can tell you what sounds good and what sounds shit, but
yeah.
I don't know what mic is what and kilohertz and shit like that. I have no idea.
And no interest, seemingly.
No. I mean, I do enough, I think.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Managing, playing.
I'm playing.
Why don't you sing and produce as well, guys?
Exactly.
Fucking slacker.
Exactly, yeah. Lazy bastard.
Well, dude, I think we can wrap it there. We're almost at an hour. That was wicked chat. And yeah. I guess you've got a sound check soon anyway. Thank you for being so courteous and welcoming to me. Sometimes when you're on tour on your own as a DJ, it can be a bit of a solitary, lonely experience. Yeah. And when bands are friendly and warm and welcoming, it makes all the difference. So
you can travel with us anytime, bro.
Thank you, man.
And you can... You know, we'll put you up there in the
put
front.
Put me up there and I'll DJ.
You can DJ. Be in charge of
how
the playlist.
How long's the drive from here to Paris? That's got to be a fairly big one, right?
Yeah, like 400 kilometers maybe.
Or well, we could rock all the way.
Let's do it.
With me in control.
Fuck yeah.
And is it Dennis driving as well?
So he's
pulling singing and driving duty. Yeah.
Well, two crazy motherfuckers in the front.
That's it. Two Mavericks.
Two Mavericks. Cool, man.
Nice one, buddy. What have you got going on for the rest of this year that people can... check out in terms of releases or touring or
this is like the last leg of my solo tour with Steel Panther, but I'm going back out in the summer with Firewind doing a few festivals and club shows supporting Queensryche.
Nice.
And we're actually after that we're gonna go back in the studio, make a new record, and we're sorting out the plan for the rest of the year and in 2020, and it's gonna be a lot of touring with Firewind.
Awesome.
And some solo gigs I would assume here and there.
And if people want to follow you, is it Gus G Official on all platforms?
Yeah. GusGOfficial.com. Same on Instagram, Twitter. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. Thank you,
cheers,
brother.
Appreciate good chat.
It.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.